today on Doomed!
I have been woken!
After a string of episodes on this show about cults, we're talking to someone today who's been, as Matt Hardy would say, woken. An awakening that made him realize that the person he idolized may not be exactly who he thought they were. Kevin, a.k.a. T1J, joins the show to discuss a person, if you listen to the show, someone very near and dear to me, and that is Sam Harris. Everyone on the show knows I love Sam Harris, and I'm really looking forward to talk about him. Yeah, okay, let's get started. Cool, let's bring up, there we go, you can see us on the feed now. Some technical issues, we'll edit that out later on. All right, Kevin, thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks for having me on, appreciate it.
And for sticking through those technical issues.
Yeah, it happens.
Right, little did I know that I had pressed the play button on my YouTube, like, to make sure the feed was going through, and forgot to mute it afterwards.
Yeah.
So I saw on my Twitter feed a couple days ago Glenn Greenwald share a video titled Why I Stopped Idolizing Sam Harris. And I watched it, and I thought it was great. And in case people don't know where I'm going with this, you're the one who who made the video.
Yes, indeed.
You have a very popular YouTube channel, it seems, almost 100,000 subscribers. And, you know, I have to say, personally, for someone who follows right-wing YouTubers nonstop pretty much to sort of always know what's going on the reactionary end of things, I have a weak spot, actually, which I'm trying to fix, stupidly enough, for people who are progressive commentators on YouTube. And I'm going to try to have more progressive and leftist and liberal YouTubers on this show. And I'm glad that you are the first, T1J.
Well, I'm glad to be the first. I didn't know it was the first.
Of the YouTubers.
Of the, like, YouTubers, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of that is because I think there's less of them. It's at least less of them that are semi-popular. I don't, you know, as far as YouTube terms goes, like 100,000 subscribers isn't that big, but I guess it's something. It's nothing to, you know, shake your head at, but.
Oh, it's definitely something. That's, you know, more than most people have.
More than most people, yeah. But yeah, I think that there's recently been sort of maybe not a resurgence, but a lot of, like, progressive channels have been coming up nowadays, so hopefully you can have more on, I guess.
Oh, for sure, definitely. Yeah, so let's get right to it, I guess. I mean, there's so much to talk about. And like I mentioned to you before we went live on the show, you know, there's a number of videos that I've seen you put up. Once I started watching that one video of yours, you know, you like for any YouTube videos, you fall into, like, the YouTube rabbit hole. And you keep watching and watching, and, you know, I saw a bunch of your videos, and there's one, you know, about how you changed your mind on someone like Anita Sarkeesian, or how the Tumblr or YouTube world could have turned you into an anti-feminist. And I think it's so interesting because I think all those things really do feed, including the Sam Harris video, obviously, feed into the same sort of response and sort of how reactionaries online use these different mediums to bring people into their movement who, honestly, looking at a lot of your stuff, you're not someone who I would have ever assumed to begin with. Obviously, people change, but even to begin with, would have fallen, even had a chance to fall in, you know, into this whole thing. And I think, you know, that doesn't say anything about you, I think. I think it says a lot about how these guys have really found a way to weaponize these mediums and sort of, you know, fool or trick people into you know, sort of taking that first step into becoming a right-wing reactionary.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to even think back as to how I like even just began to get into that. But it's definitely really easy to fall into that because I feel like getting out of it required a lot more like effort and critical thinking and things like that, which, you know, that's more effort. So the easy way is just to buy into all of like the history the left is doing this and the feminists are doing that and stuff like that. But I feel like I have a unique perspective because like I feel like to some extent I know how the reactionaries think because I was like kind of there at one point.
Right. No, so that's why you're the perfect person to have on for this, I think. And one of the things I want to bring up is, you know, you added in the description of this video that you made about Sam Harris, why I stopped idolizing Sam Harris. You put in the description, "While I don't hate Sam Harris like some other progressives, he has stopped being the intellectual hero that he once was in my eyes." And in the video, right off the bat, you bring up how, you know, this video is not meant to be a takedown of him, but you feel like it's something that needed to be said about him, and it's a major criticism of his. And, you know, you even bring up in your video, and I'm sure we'll hear this for this interview, that the Sam Harris people will without a doubt, and by Sam Harris people I mean his hardcore fans, will without a doubt claim that we're miscategorizing him or misinterpreting him or taking him out of context or, you know, all the things they love to say to give him a pass. But, you know, here you are, someone who quite honestly says, I was a Sam Harris fan. I still don't disagree with everything he says, but he's completely lost me, and here are the reasons. And I mean, like, if his fans can't hear that from you, and someone who's just so honestly lays it out there, then, I mean, it's quite clear that this is a cult. I mean, when you can't take this criticism of this guy, who is supposed to be some sort of intellectual hero, and you claim to be an intellectual yourself, if you can't take that, these criticisms, these honest criticisms, totally in good faith, then this is the very description of a cult.
Yeah, it could get pretty bad. But there, I would say there has been definitely like a range of responses from Sam Harris fans. Like I've had several people say like, "I'm a fan of Sam Harris, but I feel like you made some good points and good fair criticisms." But then I've also had some people that just like literally angry, and like it's almost like, you know, you punched their dad or something. Like it gets pretty weird.
Right. That's something I wish we had on video, actually, that someone would do that. It would make for great YouTube material. So let's start at the very beginning here. How did you, in your video, you start with new atheism in general. And I know we could fall into this rabbit hole and do way more than 45 minutes to an hour on just new atheism in general. But let's just start with that. What got you into, what made you get into new atheism? And then as an extension, discover and become a fan of Sam Harris?
Well, I basically like I grew up, I was raised a Christian, and I was at one point a pretty hardcore Christian, but over time I just on my own sort of became an atheist, I guess, and not only an atheist, but just kind of started to see a lot of problems with Christianity and religion in general. But it seemed like there was still sort of and I live in Alabama, which I don't know if you knew that, but, so I'm like surrounded by church and religion and stuff. And it seemed like even among, you know, other atheists, it seemed like very taboo to criticize religion, like openly and stuff. So in that sort of situation, you sort of, find yourself flocking to like certain communities and stuff that would talk about these things. And that's when, you know, in those communities, you hear about Chris Hitchens and then Sam Harris.
Sorry about that. You broke up just a little bit. In those communities you hear about, okay. And then from there.
Well, in those communities, you just hear about these figures that are like writing and doing, you know, debates and speeches and stuff. And that's when like I think the first one I learned about was Richard Dawkins. And then just from there, I've learned about Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris and all the other guys. And just from there, I just went down the rabbit hole. I was watching debates, and it's very like validating to me to see like Sam Harris sort of like more eloquently like explaining the problems that I was having with religion and stuff like that. So that's basically where it started. Like just the initial religion is bad type of
right
writings and arguments.
That's probably where it starts for most people. I mean, you know, that seems to be, it's interesting to me too. You know, there is a very stark difference between just, you know, being an atheist and then new atheism. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned in your video, you bring up the four horsemen, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Daniel Dennett, and Sam Harris. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's interesting to me how, you know, those guys would all be considered, I think for the most part, you probably know this better than me, new atheists. They're not, you know, they're not someone who's just like, you know, I just don't believe in a higher power. I don't believe in a God. This world is the world we have, and that's it. Once you die. You know, that's like, you could just be fine with just being that. But these guys have to take it that step further as new atheists and really just become, you know, this really anti-religion in general, but even further than that, it seems like they all just love to, you know, put Islam as their number one target when it comes to their anti-religion crusades, if not their only target for the most part, it seems like. You know, and it's weird to me that these are the intellectual atheists, that they are all new atheists.
Yeah, pretty much. The Islam thing is really weird, how they just zeroed in on that. And I mean, I guess I talk about in the video where I think I understand why Sam Harris does it to some extent. Like, he's just like convinced of this unique evil of Islam. But they just kind of transitioned from like religion is bad to like Islam is bad, you know, right. To some extent.
Right.
You know, they would probably refute that characteristic, but that's definitely the what it looks like. That's the impression that they give off.
Right, right. And you know, looking at that list of people, if again, to my listeners, if you're not familiar, I mean, most of them are probably familiar with Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Daniel Dennett's probably the least known name in that Four Horsemen list. But if you look at all four of them, like, pull up a picture of Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and Daniel Dennett. And then looking at the four of them, you'll sort of understand right away why Sam Harris has become, like, the cool guy to the young white men who are really easily influenced by basically this reactionary movement where, you know, we're going to talk about this more, but Sam Harris I really do consider as part of this right-wing reactionary movement, even if, out of all of these guys, he probably does have more, I'm not going to say leftist, but more, you know, mainstream Democrat, mainstream liberal positions on things.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. I think a lot of times Sam Harris is often mischaracterized, because if you listen, like if you ever hear him talking about like economic issues or even social issues, it's like always more to the left. Like, you know, he's argued for things like basic income, and he acknowledges like social injustice and things like that, but I wouldn't say it's like the focus of his writings. Right. So a lot of people don't know about it.
Right. Which is interesting because, you know, if you're someone who does claim to find these things to be important and you advocate for them, I mean, it would be really easy to incorporate that in your main body of work, being that those things are a major extension of everyday life, even if you are an atheist, especially probably if you're an atheist.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So Sam Harris has really gained this big following, much bigger than those other guys, probably because he is the youngest of the Four Horsemen, very, you know, he's a young intellectual, written many books, he has a very popular podcast, and you were a fan of his.
Yeah, and definitely was.
So what was the moment, pretty much, or what were the things that made you question, you know, your fandom, I guess, you're standing for, maybe, of Sam Harris?
Yeah, so I talk about it in the video, but the first thing that just really sort of made me raise my eyebrow a little bit is just kind of the way that he acted. This is kind of weird. Like, it was before I even began to engage his arguments, but I would just see him, like, basically, like, acting like a child on Twitter, and just, like, he, like, throws tantrums, and he'll, like, you know, someone will, you know, write a sentence criticizing him, and then he'll write, like, a 1,000-word blog in response, like, an angry response. It's like, why are you being like that, dude? Like, I don't know. And it just, that's the first thing that just sort of started raising my eyebrow, and it sort of made me more open to those criticisms of him. So that was the beginning of it.
Right.
And then just from there, it was just taking the time to sort of really go through the things he was saying.
Right. So I want to bring that up, because I think that's that's interesting to me, because I think it's a major flaw of his, obviously. Like, let's say you are someone who you know, you're a commentator, a well-known writer and author, whatever. Like, just look at the conservative movement. The people who've become big names in conservatism and even people who've become white supremacists, brought white supremacy to popularity in the age of Donald Trump. You look at someone. You could take someone like a Richard Spencer. Like, everything about him is abhorrent, obviously. But he is someone who has found a way to play the game. He's found a way to... He's good at the media game. He knows how to get attention. He knows how to look good to his specific audience. Like, he would never do this wishy-washy stuff with his beliefs the way Sam Harris does with his beliefs, his own beliefs. Which, to me, like, if you're an intellectual, it seems like the most basic... You know, the most basic form of being a smart guy, quote unquote, is to just be able to, at the very least, stand by what you say. Like, Richard Spencer, you can take him down as a piece of shit, which he is. But one thing you can say is that he doesn't stand by what he believes. Like, it is amazing to me that Sam Harris puts forth what he thinks, what he says to be, you know, these intellectual, smart takes. Yet he just refuses to stand by what he says. He just doesn't take a position. And like, yeah. that should be, like, to me, the ultimate, like, warning to anybody who's a fan of his. Clearly it was to you.
Yeah. I mean, and once you start actually, like, paying attention to what he's doing, it's like, I feel like he can't really stand by it because he's not saying much of anything. He just sort of speaks very vaguely. A lot of the time, and he'll say, like, you know, he'll make a statement, is like, well, in this statement, I'm speaking hypothetically from the perspective of these other people that's may or may not be how I feel. And it's like, it's just, he makes it very hard for you to even pinpoint what his position even is. Doubt that he doesn't, but I don't know. I mean, maybe in his head it makes sense, but it's just all so very ambiguous. And it's like, so when someone calls him out on it, he can't really stand by anything because he hasn't really said anything.
Right. Which makes it impossible to, like, disagree with his beliefs because you don't really know what they are, even though we sort of do. Like, I want to add this to the addendum. He definitely puts forward what he believes. It's just that he can't stand by them, so when you try to criticize what he believes, he claims he actually does not believe that.
Yeah, I'm like kind of hesitant sometimes to say that because it's people say that a lot, where it's like, well, he puts these things in hypotheticals, but that's like what he actually believes, and I don't know if I want to go that far and just assume that he believes something if he says he doesn't, but. It's definitely hard to figure out.
Right. And this is sort of, I think, where, like, you know, one of the reasons I wanted you specifically is because, you know, I think we will agree in certain areas, but our agreements will be pretty much just how hard we criticize Sam Harris on certain things. And, you know, that's why I think having you on will make even the most extremely loving Sam Harris fan, you know, the most hardest of the hardcore Sam Harris fan, hopefully think I'm being fair because you're here. And I think he actually is, you know, and let's get into this discussion now, I think, because you bring it up in your video. I do think he's an Islamophobe. I do think he's a racist. Whether he espouses those ideas himself or not, to me, doesn't really matter. Because, for example, let's take this issue. You know, this was one of the major scandals or dramas surrounding Sam Harris in recent months. It's sort of, if anyone remembers when Sam Harris and Ezra Klein from Vox went back and forth over email, it was about Sam Harris having Charles Murray on the show. Right. And actually, do you want to take it from there? Do you want to give us a little bit of background on Sam Harris having Charles Murray on the show? Just sort of bring up, you know, who Charles Murray is and how that conversation with Sam Harris went.
Well, Charles Murray is like, I guess he's a sort of like a conservative science researcher guy. And he wrote a book called The Bell Curve, or he co-authored a book called The Bell Curve. And one of the things that was discussed in that book is the relationship between race and IQ. And, you know, it's established that certain races have lower IQ on average than others. For example, blacks have lower IQ on average than white people. And there was discussion of whether or not that is at least in part because of genetics. And like I would assume, like most people would assume, or I think that most like honest people would assume that it's probably mostly environmental factors, but there's discussion about whether genetics plays a role in it. And so he's been a controversial figure for years because of that. And then I think it was like a year ago, he was a speaker at a college. I think it was Middlebury College.
Right, right.
And he got protested like pretty hard, like to the extent where it got like violent and stuff. And so Sam Harris sees this, and I think he sees this as an opportunity to talk about, you know, he likes to talk about political correctness and free speech and stuff like that. And I think he sees this as an opportunity to further that sort of agenda, I guess. So he invites Charles Murray on his podcast, and, you know, among other things, they talk about the idea of whether race and IQ is a genetic thing. And they also talk about like the ideas of political correctness and things like that.
How hard does Sam Harris push against that theory, or offer his own addendums or criticism?
I don't think he does at all.
Sort of my point. yeah, right. Like, listen, like I on this show, and I'm sure in your YouTube videos, if you know a conservative reached out to you to have some sort of debate, you know, an honest debate about the issues. I would, and I'm sure you would too, be open to doing that. Like, I've had a conservative on this specific show, Doomed, before. I had that girl who left Turning Point USA, the one who started that diaper protest on Kent State that got mocked, and then she left Turning Point USA. I had her on this show so she could tell us about that. And then I debated her. She's sort of all over the place now because she's started her own grift where she basically carries her assault rifle all over the place. But that's another thing aside. But so we debated, and you know, I did not let her, you know, get away with what she said without offering critique and criticism and basically shutting down her just being wrong. And you know, mm-hmm. It's not the issue of having this guy on, although I don't think I would have someone like this on the show. I probably wouldn't have a Nazi or white supremacist on the show either, because there's just some things that are just obviously wrong that there is no debate. But you know, listen, like if you're gonna have someone like this on your show and you claim to disagree with them, fine, you're a free speech warrior, fine, you have the guy on, you give him his time, but then you can't leave your audience with even the possible assumption that you agree with this guy. It just, like, you can't. Like, you can say all you want that you are not a racist and you don't agree with this guy's science, but if you invite him on and let him have an hour or however long the show is, a free time on your podcast, and Sam Harris probably has what would you guesstimate his audience size is for that podcast?
Probably millions, right?
Right, right. At the very least, yeah. I mean, how do you let it just go? You just let millions of people listen to this guy who never knew about him, gave him this amazing platform, just let him speak and then say nothing to refute anything he says, not even offer any sort of alternative idea or facts to it. So at the very least, your audience leaves questioning it so they do more research, because otherwise he just left his audience with, oh, Sam agrees with that. He didn't say anything. Cool. That just must be the facts then.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of a big problem. And the problem with this issue specifically is that it's actually complicated. Like, it's not like a very clear cut yes or no type thing, but it was, you know, and this is one of the things where I would guess that Sam Harris would disagree that he's doing what we're saying he's doing. But I would say that podcast, that conversation endorsed, you know, Murray's view.
Right.
And I think he would probably say it was just a conversation and he wasn't endorsing or not endorsing. But like, when you don't sort of offer any nuance to the conversation or any disagreement, then that's how it ends up looking. But I don't think that was even the point. I think his whole point was to bring in this guy who's a victim of the politically correct progressives, and because, you know, the title of the episode was Forbidden Knowledge, which is obnoxious.
but you know what? Like, you and me are having a conversation right now. And I just told you that I absolutely, maybe I misunderstood, but in your video, I think you make it clear that you don't think, or at least you don't want to say, because you're not sure, yeah, that Sam Harris is an Islamophobe or a racist. And yeah, I disagree with you. I think, even if he himself, his own personal views, again, whatever they may be, because we'll never really know, even if those aren't racist or Islamophobic, certainly he promotes racism and Islamophobia by having someone like Charles Murray on his show and not debating him on it, not refuting his claims, not offering an alternative view. You know, again, though, like, you could also say you're a free speech crusader and hate political correctness. Invite this guy on the show so he could have his speech being able to be heard or whatever. And still, isn't their whole idea that this is like the free marketplace of ideas and we should just have one big debate? Well, where's the fucking debate then, guys?
Yeah. I think I guess it just depends on how you define a racist, because obviously at the end of the day, what the impact of what you say and do is probably what matters more. But I don't know, I guess I just feel uncomfortable labeling someone a racist if they don't personally hold the beliefs, because I just feel like there's a lot of people who just, they live their life and, you know, they aren't necessarily like bigoted against anyone themselves, but they don't, you know, they don't really care and they don't really care how their words and actions affect people. And I've gotten this argument from other people as well. And people are like, well, that's, you know, that's functionally the same thing as being a racist. But I guess it's just kind of feels uncomfortable to me for me to label it that way.
Right. I think, you know, I think a lot of people have, especially people not on the left, or people who feel the same way you do too, You know, someone like a Donald Trump. Is Donald Trump a racist? You know, he has black people in his administration. He has Hispanic, friends, Latino friends. You know, is he a sexist? How could he be? He has a daughter. Like, like, you know, I think, you know, but clearly if you look at his policies and what he says and does, I can say you can certainly argue that he for sure is a sexist and a racist. I mean, but, you know, but is
I actually have a video called Donald Trump is a racist. So.
There you go. Like,
I think with him, he actually says bigoted things against, I feel like pretty straightforwardly bigoted things.
Right.
While Sam Harris is a little more, I think.
Sorry about that. You broke up a little bit. Just go back a little bit, and we'll pick it up from where you talked about how Sam Harris is a bit different in that aspect.
Yeah, I just think Sam Harris is a little more subtle, and it's not even necessarily what he says, but sort of the implications and the impact of what he says that is a problem.
You know, I think that's a great point, and I think that actually makes, well, obviously, doesn't make him more dangerous than Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the most powerful man in the world, but I think it makes him more dangerous than full blown white right wing white, you could even say white wing reactionaries, like, for example, you know, like your modern conservative like a Ben Shapiro, or your conspiratorial conservatives like a Mike Cernovich, or your classical liberals like a Dave Rubin. I think, although Dave Rubin might fall in this category a little bit too, Sam Harris, I would say, probably has more fans who consider a majority of their beliefs to be on the more liberal or progressive side of things than any other of these conservatives or reactionaries, period, I would say. And I think that's because in these areas where Sam Harris most definitely loses all argument of saying he has liberal or progressive bona fides, I think he's so subtle that they don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. And they, like, if you, the Southern Poverty Law Center did an article about how people get into the alt-right and stuff like that. And even if you look at other sources like that or other articles about similar things, it's never people never say Donald Trump got me into the alt-right, you know. It's always people like Sam Harris, Ben Shapiro, those stepping stones. And I think that's part of the reason why, is because they sort of subtly put these ideas in your head instead of just blasting you with it full on, like someone like Donald Trump or Richard Spencer. It's they sort of almost give it a legitimacy that other people don't.
Right. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, that Southern Poverty Law Center article about this, because I also had it in my notes and I want to bring it up. You know, Barry Weiss, who wrote that intellectual dark web piece for the New York Times, in your video you even bring it up, and you have this great line in your video how the intellectual dark web is like a slightly less masturbatory name than the Four Horsemen. And I actually think, you know, I think most of those type of people who would find both of them, who would like both of those groups, probably, I want to say, would have a equally easy time masturbating to both. but let me bring up the quote in the Southern Poverty Law Center piece. They say, you know, under the guise of science, this is the same quote that Barry Weiss brings up from that piece in her article. Mm-hmm. Under the guise of scientific objectivity, Harris has presented deeply flawed data to perpetuate fear of Muslims and to argue that black people are genetically inferior to whites. Now, that's from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and that's same piece is quote that same line is quoted in Barry Weiss's intellectual dark web article that also mentioned Sam Harris. Mm-hmm. Now, in the very next paragraph, she writes in response to that line from the Southern Poverty Law Center, that isn't true. The group excoriated Mr. Harris, a fierce critic of the treatment of women and gays under radical Islam, for saying that some percentage, however small, of Muslim immigrants are radicalized. So Southern Poverty Law Center is wrong for saying that that Sam Harris has perpetuated a fear of Muslims, because Sam Harris has only said a very small amount of Muslims are extremists or dangerous or could be terrorists. So she asks Sam Harris to sort of, I guess, be more specific. Interesting that even Barry Weiss has to ask him that. Yeah. But so he answers her. He estimates that some 20% of Muslims worldwide are Islamists and jihadis. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, like 20% of Muslims, we're talking, first of all, we're talking of a group of billions. So that means 20% is somewhere in at the very least, the 200 million category. Saying yeah. 200 million Muslims are terrorists or are waiting in like the shadows to become full-blown terrorists is extremist and Islamophobic and ridiculous. And let me tell you, you and me, Kevin, if that were true, we would be fucked.
Right.
200 million terrorists out there just waiting for that moment to snap. We would lose for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I had similar issues with that quote from the Southern Poverty Law Center, but I don't like, that's another thing. I didn't really talk about it much in the video, but the way that Sam Harris sort of interprets the polls and data that he uses is really weird. And it's a thing that I didn't necessarily notice at first, but it's, I don't know, it's sort of like this thing where you collect different polls from just countries all over the world. And it's like, well, in this country, so-and-so percent, you know, thinks that if you draw Muhammad, you should be killed. And in this country, even somehow that 20% of Muslims are radicalized, which is like, I don't think that's like how that kind of data works. I don't think,
right.
I mean, I don't know.
Right. It's like saying, you know, it's like saying, I don't know. What does the Catholic Church believe? And then assuming that, you know, all Catholics believe that same thing, yeah. Even though, like, I would probably say a majority of Catholics probably are, you know, the Catholic Church doesn't, is anti-gay. But I would actually say when it comes to, like, when it comes to probably the majority of Catholics probably are, or at the very least, okay with gay marriage. If not, like, you know, they're not, like, full-blown against it like the church is. It's like there's a difference.
Yeah. And there's I think you also have to acknowledge that, like, it's like people are complex. People, a lot of people believe like really crazy stuff. That doesn't mean that they're terrorists or likely to be terrorists. Like, for example, I think circumcision is like barbaric and like ridiculous. But I know a lot of people that circumcise their children, and a lot of people think that's the right thing to do. To me, that's like a pretty radical view. It's like literal genital mutilation. But those people aren't terrorists. The vast majority of them are not terrorists, are not likely to be terrorists. And, you know, from our point of view, that's a more mundane example because it's so common. But like, maybe there's people that think you should be punished for drawing the Prophet Muhammad, but that doesn't mean that they're gonna strap a bomb to themselves and blow up a building, you know? So I think you just have to acknowledge the complexity of humans. We're just weird like that.
Right.
And I understand, like, both of those are, you know, I think the world would be better if people didn't believe stuff like that. But I don't think you can just conclude, oh, they're radicals and they're likely to be terrorists just because they believe something that's crazy.
Right. And I want to bring up, before, earlier you mentioned something about, you know, Sam Harris doesn't consider, like, you know, the environmental factors and things. When we were talking about Charles Murray's belief and why maybe the data shows something, but he's not interpreting it correctly because they refuse to see the environmental factors or how policy or politics plays a role. They'd rather just say it's race or religion related purely. Let's get into that because I think this is really the crux of Sam Harris being absolutely wrong about everything and not knowing what he's talking about. He, when talking about Islam and having this laser focus on Islam, he just, and you bring this up in your video, he just refuses, just outright refuses to see the geopolitical importances that play in what happens in the world. Like, for example, when when a terrorist attack happens, or just the rise of maybe a certain group in maybe, let's say, the Middle East, the rise of ISIS, let's say, for example, he sees it as a group of people who are driven by the teachings of the Quran, and that's purely what they're based on. Again, 1.6 billion, I believe, people believe in Islam and read the Quran, and that's their holy book. 1.6 billion people aren't part of ISIS. Majority of Muslims most definitely do not like ISIS, because newsflash for Sam Harris, who are the main victims, the number one casualties of a group like ISIS? It's other Muslims. ISIS is driven by power, geopolitics. I mean, what are they going for? They're really not trying to spread Islam in what, Syria and Iraq? No, it's a land grab. It's a power play. Mm-hmm. And he just refuses, just outright, I could be even giving him too much credit. Maybe he does see it, and just it doesn't play into what his true message is trying to be. And maybe you could speak to that. But he just doesn't consider these things.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre, because I don't know, to me that's just sort of like, it's like obvious. You know, like, it, I mean, this, and there are so many examples throughout history of radical groups, and there's always a political factor. Like, I don't think, I mean, I can acknowledge the religious component. There's some who argue. Oh,
sorry, you just broke up a little bit. Just where you acknowledge the religious. And I want to add to you too, you're absolutely right. Like, religion is used as a tool to sort of convert people. Just like reactionaries go after the young college aged to young, 20s and 30-year-old white men who might be lost in the world, unemployment, things like that, and they're looking for a scapegoat. Over there, they see, young Arab men who are facing hard times, hardships, and they say, we could use religion as a tool to make these guys fight for us so we could get power. Like, that's religion definitely is used as a tool, but it's not the reason for it.
Yeah, I would say that religion is part of it. There are part of it at all, but like, if you read the Quran or the Bible or something, like, it makes it easier to use it as a tool, basically, is what I'm saying. And if it was different, it probably would be less easy. Some people disagree with that, but that's kind of what I would say about that. But I think, obviously,
I hate interrupting you, but the funny thing about that is that, I mean, you could say the same about Sam Harris's own writing. If he just got a little bit more specific, maybe people wouldn't assume he was an Islamophobe, and maybe young right-wing men or anti-Islamic people or anti-religious extremists, new atheists, wouldn't read him that way and take actions inspired by those words.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he just doesn't care, to be honest. But and Sam Harris is very prolific, and I haven't read 100% of the things that he's written, and I haven't listened to every single podcast, but I've concluded that he's like probably not a racist. But like me, for example, maybe some of my views might need more explaining, elaborating, but I don't think I've ever said anything that would lead people to think that guy's a huge racist or that guy's a genocidal maniac. Like, if someone thinks you're genocidal, you're doing something wrong. Like, even if you aren't, if someone thinks you are, you have to be doing something wrong, because that's a huge misinterpretation to make. So,
right. I mean, whoopsie. Everyone thinks I'm I support genocide now. Didn't mean to do that.
I feel like that shouldn't happen.
So you bring up, in your video, I actually never heard of this this term before, the Gish Gallop. And you bring it up to say that you really do believe that, And I agree with you 100%. But I think the way you framed it was great. So I'd love for you to do it, you know, again here. You know, you mentioned how this is a strategy that Sam Harris intentionally uses. Can you explain the strategy and you know, what he gets out of using it?
Yeah, so the Gish Gallop is an argumentative tactic. It's usually used in face-to-face debates, but I think it can also be applied to, you know, like published pieces and stuff like that. But it's basically where you sort of bombard the listener with a bunch of arguments, a bunch of claims all at once, or like back to back, and they're usually not very well developed, they're vague. And you do so many of them at once that it's basically impossible to properly refute them all, because it would require far too much effort. And the people use this tactic because it sort of allows you to get away with weaker arguments, because you can always say, well, you didn't refute the argument that I made before that, or the one that I made after that, so I win. And I feel like Sam Harris does this a lot, where he just sort of makes these sort of vague claims, and then he doesn't really elaborate, and then he moves on to his next point. And so whenever you see, like, I think that's part of why he, you know, he's so commonly accuses people of misinterpreting him or misrepresenting him, because whenever someone does do like a response piece to him, he can always be like, well, what about this sentence right here that you didn't respond to? Or what about, you know, this other claim? Or he'll be like, you're assuming something, but that's like all you can do because you didn't make a clear enough claim. So all I can go off of is what it sounds like you're implying. And I feel like he does that like all the time.
Right. You actually use, I think, the perfect example, because it was one of probably his most controversial pieces, and that's his piece titled In Defense of Profiling.
Yeah.
And how, you know, people called him out for it, and his response was pretty much, how dare you say I'm defending profiling?
Yeah. That was, he was like, he just seemed really surprised that people would find the sentence "we should profile Muslims" offensive. Like, I don't know how you don't see that beforehand.
Right. And to be, again, if there's a Sam Harris listener, you know, a fan listening right now, I want to make sure we're not taking him out of context. I don't want to misinterpret or misrepresent what he believes or what he said, at the very least. So let me read the exact quote. Mm-hmm. "We should profile Muslims or anyone who looks like he or she could conceivably be Muslim, and we should be honest about it." So to not misrepresent him or misinterpret him, Kevin, you said that Sam Harris said we should profile Muslims. That's inaccurate. He said we should profile Muslims and also anyone who looks like they could possibly be Muslim.
Yeah. Jeez.
So, I mean, you know, that's basically saying, like, you know, if you're watching the YouTube feed right now, looking at us right now, they'll see me and maybe they could possibly think maybe this guy looks Middle Eastern. Maybe he looks like he could have some, he could be a half Arabic or something. Who knows? Or they look at you and they think, oh, he's a very possibly a black Muslim. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like. That's what he thinks is fine. As long as we could conceivably be a Muslim, then profiling is okay.
And that sort of goes back to what we're saying, like the difference between actually being racist and or actually having a bigoted view against people of color and the impact of what you're saying. Because saying we should, because he says, you know, he wrote like an addendum where he's like, I don't mean brown people. I just mean Muslims. Basically, that's what he said. I don't know if that, I guess that's fair, but most, like the vast majority of Muslims are non-white, so that's essentially what is going to happen, is you're going to profile non-white people. But and that's you know, so the implications of what you're saying are racist, and as I said, a lot of people say that's functionally the same thing as being racist. So I don't know.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I feel like we're on, you know, the same page here when it comes to perfect segues on this episode, because because he, in this article in Defense of Profiling, and you again mentioned this in your video, he brings up, he adds an addendum to this piece after all the drama comes out. Mm-hmm. And he says, and I'm reading him verbatim here, this is a quote, "When I speak of profiling Muslims, or anyone who looks like he or she could conceivably be Muslim, I am not narrowly focused on people with dark skin. In fact, I included myself in the description of the type of person who I think should be profiled twice." Okay, so, and again, you bring this up in the video. Let's take a look at the two times. I want to, he made it clear it was two times, so I want to make it clear. The two times Sam Harris says that he should also maybe be profiled for being a Muslim. These are the two times in the original piece. This was not an addendum. This was not an addition. This was in the original unedited version of In Defense of Profiling. "Although I don't think I look like a jihadi or like a man pretending not to be one, I do not mean to suggest that a person like me should be exempt from scrutiny." So right there, he adds that I don't look like I'm a Muslim, so it would be kind of silly, even though it's possible people could look at me. And then here comes that second time. "And again, I wouldn't put someone who looks like me entirely out of the bullseye. After all, who would Adam Gadan look like if he cleaned himself up? But there are people who do not stand the chance of being jihadists, and TSA screeners can know this at a glance." So here he is again adding that little, this little quantifier. Basically, you know, the TSA could pull me over, but, you know, it would probably be a waste of taxpayer money. They should know just by looking at me that I'm probably not a terrorist.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he puts those things in there, so it's, you can't help but assume that he's implying that. But since he didn't say that outright, he can always deny it. And that's what he does in everything he writes.
So what... You brought this up as well. Let's get to this, because I think in literally every episode that I've done on like the reactionary movement and the rise of the different right wing groups, you know, I bring up Dave Rubin, and you bring him up too, and I think it's because Dave Rubin is pretty. It's pretty hard to talk about these guys without bringing up Dave Rubin, because he has. Again, I think more liberals are onto him than they would be a Sam Harris. I think Dave Rubin has many less people who listen to him who would consider themselves progressive or liberal. But because he portrays himself as this down the middle of the road guy, "I'm not a conservative, I'm a classical liberal." And again, classical liberal, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically just a conservative. But by saying the word classical liberal, you fool people who don't know that. Mm-hmm. Dave Rubin is someone who Sam Harris has never gone after for doing some of these things he claims and that the regressive left does. And just bring us through that, because you talked about it in your video, and I want to really get more into that here.
Well, the example I use in the video was he and Sam Harris has like this long time feud with Reza Aslan, who's a Muslim scholar, basically, and writer. But the example I use in the video is he criticized Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, because Cenk Uygur had Reza Aslan and Reza Aslan Sam Harris. And of course, Sam Harris doesn't like when people do that. And so he was like, "You had him on your show and you let him say all this stuff about me that wasn't true. And you let him say all these falsehoods and you didn't challenge him at all. You didn't criticize him." But Dave Rubin does that all the time. That's like the format of his show, is he just lets people come on his show and say whatever they want. And he never challenges them. But he's never extended that same criticism to Dave Rubin. And he's appeared on Dave Rubin and he's all chummy with them every time they're together. So, you know, to me, that implies that it's just he's just more focused on his sort of anti-progressive agenda than he is about actual like fairness, you know.
Right. Right. I mean, if someone was to go on, this wouldn't even happen because Dave Rubin wouldn't have anyone on his show who would criticize Sam Harris. So he would never, it would never have a problem with Dave Rubin. It's just that simple.
Right.
Yeah. So like, you know, when it comes down to these free speech guys like a Sam Harris who care about political correctness so much, I mean, like how does he, cause he always brings up the fact that, doesn't he say he was a Hillary Clinton supporter and, mm-hmm. and one of his major criticisms is that, his one major criticism, his one criticism at all, actually, just to completely be honest about these guys, is that they don't criticize Donald Trump enough. And I'll give that to Sam Harris. He's probably the only one in that world who believes that. So my question to Sam Harris, though, is wouldn't that tell you something? Or what my statement to Sam Harris would be, wouldn't that tell you something? Like, you are in this movement, this world, where you either got to bring yourself to there's one of two options. Either one, the reason they're not criticizing Donald Trump is because they're all right-wingers. And you don't realize you're in a group of right-wingers. Because maybe you also don't realize you yourself are a right-winger. And then number two, the thing is, if you're not a right-winger, then what are you doing with all these same beliefs as these guys? Like, maybe you need to have an introspective and look at yourself.
Yeah, I don't fully understand it. Like, my base assumption is that it's just... I don't want to say, like... he's using these people, but I feel like they just have this shared anti-left agenda, and they don't really. And this is something that happens on the right a lot, where they just have this, people with like technically different political views have this solidarity in opposition to the left, and I think he's just part of that. But it's just inconsistent with what he claims to be about and what he talks about, like. Another example is Ben Shapiro, who ironically is not a Trump supporter, but like Sam Harris has had Ben Shapiro on his podcast, and they're friendly, and he's like, I think you're a smart guy, I think you're doing good work, but like, at least from my perspective, Ben Shapiro's like always wrong on everything, like,
right.
And he's like,
well, let's also add the fact that, you know, Ben Shapiro doesn't like Trump because Trump makes his conservative intellectual the serious conservatives look silly, because in reality, all the policies Trump advocates for, Ben Shapiro totally is on board with.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. But I guess, well, the thing with Ben Shapiro, like, I feel like he's just constantly using like fallacious arguments. He's very loose with facts. And I feel like someone like the Sam Harris that my young self admired would be destroying a guy like that, you know, left and right. But he doesn't. And I think it's just because right now Ben Shapiro is useful to his agenda, or maybe just in general forever, Ben Shapiro is useful to his agenda.
Right. And it's so weird to me that a guy with Sam Harris's platform would even feel that way, because like he's got to know how powerful, like, he's got power. Like, he would be seen as more serious, more people, a broader range of people would find him to be one of the respectable serious guys if he came out and actually disagreed with publicly these guys like he claims he does when it comes to, you know, the issues that he may be more of your mainstream Democrat on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Right. Right.
It's just really bizarre to me. And that's just sort of why, like, I just drifted further and further away. Cause it just, he's just not the guy that I used to like.
now, do you think, and we could, I think this is a good question to really wrap this up with. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like one of a two-part question. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think Sam Harris changed, or has he always been this guy, and you're just, as you've matured, you realize this?
Well, it's definitely more me than him, for sure. I think he's definitely ramped up the sort of PC talk from like the very beginning, and like I feel like that's his main thing now. Like, he doesn't, I can't remember the last time he's really like discussed like Islam and things like that. Like that's sort of been a few years. I'm sure it'll come up again, but more. I wouldn't say that he's changed or like he used to be good and now he's not good. Like he's probably the same guy.
Right.
Because my sort of evolution is not just on Sam Harris. It's on all these issues and all these sort of figures. So it's definitely me.
Right. So here's the second part of that question. And again, you were just on point with these segues. So what would you say to someone who was in your shoes now, or who was in the shoes you were then, now? Like, you know, you probably won't have the same experience, or I should say they probably won't have the same, maybe you can say, awakening that you did. Because, you know, just the majority of Sam Harris's fans are young white men. Mm-hmm. And there are certain issues that you probably, as you heard Sam Harris talk about, and you probably were like, hey, wait a minute. They probably won't, those issues probably won't be that change of heart for them. But yeah. I do think there is going to be, at least on the issue of religion, because you definitely share with a lot of these young white men the issue that you came from a Christian family and a Christian upbringing. And that's what drove you to New Atheism and someone like Sam Harris. So what would you say to them? What would be your advice to like at least make them start questioning someone like Sam Harris and to sort of move away? Maybe things they could realize that, you know, this isn't what I actually should be on board with.
Well, that's kind of tough. Because a person has to sort of want to or be open to sort of considering other opinions, and you can't really make someone do that. But I would say a main thing is listen or read other stuff besides Sam Harris and people who agree with him. So just read other stuff. You know, or even just look up, like if in general, like if someone makes a claim, you should like look it up and see if it's true and see if it's supported by evidence. But a thing that I was doing was I would like when I was younger, I was just like I was consuming just a lot of Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, just reading all their stuff nonstop. And I wouldn't really read any of the counter arguments or the refutations or things like that. So I think that's something that's good to do just in general, but especially with someone like Sam Harris, like read the response article, read the response blog, even like, you know, listen to the debates. Like the Ezra Klein debate, I think, is good. And, you know, Sam Harris fans think that he destroyed Ezra and everyone else, and other people think that it was the other way. But I think that's the biggest thing is expose yourself to other arguments. And that doesn't mean that every opposing argument is going to have merit, but once you put in your head that there are other points of view, that sort of plants the seed of thinking about things in a different way. And that's kind of what I did, at least.
Right. And that's I mean, that really is telling in terms of why Sam Harris and other people who are part of this intellectual dark web or, you know, reactionary or new atheist movement, however, whatever group you want to consider Sam Harris part of, that's why they don't have these debates, because these debates would lose them fans.
Yeah, definitely, like, even I see this on YouTube a lot where people that sort of have those sort of reactionary views, they try to do these debates. But at least from my perspective, maybe I'm biased, but whenever they debate someone who has any idea what they're talking about, they just get made a fool of. So over time, they just tend to stop doing it.
Right. Kevin T1J at the one janitor on Twitter. What is your YouTube channel? Because I just saw when I go to your YouTube channel, it just shows up that, you know, when the generic string of numbers and letters that YouTube gives every channel. What is like the YouTube username though that people can like youtube.com/user/
The One Janitor.
The One Janitor.
T-H-E number one and janitor. Or you can just type in T1J in the search and it'll come up.
Perfect. Got it. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know I contacted you last minute, but I'd seen that video of yours tweeted out. I know you just put it up a couple days ago. I saw Glenn Greenwald putting it out there. I watched it, and I do think that your video is, it's already at like 100,000 views. It's definitely, I think, going to spread even more because I think you are someone, and looking at the comments, that the usual Sam Harris fanboys are going to listen to more so than other people who've had similar awakenings, because I think you put it forward in a way that I guess other people leave Sam Harris fandom and are angry at themselves, and then also angry that they believe the things he believed, and come across like, and they have every right to, the with the things they say. And I think you, however, in this video really tried to reach specifically the Sam Harris fanboys by, I think you put it forward the same way Sam Harris, like the same type of, the listen to me, this is how I do it, but except you're not vague and you're very specific in what you say.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try to do on all of my videos. Like, I try to look at things from many perspectives, and I value civility. Like, that's just a thing that I think is important. And I know, like, it's hard to be like that when, people suck and people are saying really shitty things. But that's just what I try to do in my videos. So I'm glad that it's resonating. Like, it's been my biggest video in a long time. So
right.
I'm glad people like it.
Someone's got to do it so I could have you on to talk with them, because I can't be that guy. I can't be the civil guy. Yeah. Just can't do it. Can't do it. It's not in me. It's not who I am.
I get it.
All right, man. Thank you so much for joining us. I implore everyone to, at the very least, check out the video. It is Why I Stopped Idolizing Sam Harris. You can find it on YouTube. I will have a link to it in the description for this show. Take care, man. Thanks again for joining me.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Bye. All right, everybody. That is the show. We could go to some calls here. There goes our guest, Kevin. He was great. Let me just make me full screen here. Cool. Let's go to some comments here, and then that will be the show for this week. Great fucking show, says Louis Carlos. Thank you so much. Renee says that I should call in as Jordan Peterson. Please do that next time. I'm not going to do calls today simply because since we went long, and I try to make the shows. I know a lot of these shows go long sometimes, but I try to make these shows consumable. I know there's a lot of problem with podcasts where you're listening, it's a great show, but you only have so much time in the day, and it's like, holy shit, why is Joe Rogan talking for 3 hours? I can't do this. So I tried not to get to that point. Let's see. Going to the YouTube comments. Well, let me try something here, actually. I've been meaning to try this with this software. Let's see. Look at that. You could see Louis. Jameson's not listening, and he's calling into the show. Unbelievable. Do I take it? Fine. I'll take it. That's it. This is the call, and that's it. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, you're of course not listening to me and calling in when I specifically said I am not going to take any calls.
You're going to have people call in.
Oh, I apologize. I actually said I will not be having people call in.
All right, fine. You know what? I'm out of here.
No, you're on. You're on. It's too late. You're on.
I'm trying to force myself to be a co-host of the show, force it on you. So right. I apologize for that.
Right. I really need to do something actually about the fact that anyone can literally call in at any time.
Oh yeah. My apologies. I can hang up, but I just wanted to, at least give you one thing to talk about, which was, why is it that people like Sam Harris or even Ben Shapiro, these people who kind of build up a cult of personality, end up being on the right wing, also having a lot of authoritarian views. So I guess less focusing on Sam Harris and more the type of audience that they engender as a function of what they're actually espousing.
Right.
But, yeah, I'll leave it up. I'll leave off that.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. I would love to go into that more on a different day, in a different episode.
Another time.
All right. Now, Jameson's great, which is why I took that call. He's being a big help to the show in terms of building a, hopefully, we're going to get a Discord going soon. But more info will be on that as it comes forward. Rachel Atwood is sending me a message saying, sorry, we went on a bit of a tangent about the history of Turkey, Greece, and the Balkans. That was in the comments section over here, which I completely ignored once I saw it got into this conversation. Not because I'm not interested, but I really can't be talking about Sam Harris as the guest and also trying to have a debate about Turkey, Greece, and the Balkans. Renee said I should make Jameson a co-doomer. Right. Right. Well, when people call into the show, you can be a temporary co-host for sure. Discord is fun, says Orangism. He also says good call. Renee is calling me Matthew Albinder, telling me to scroll up. Listen, if I were to read these comments right now about Turkey, Greece, and the Balkans, it would be its own episode. Because you guys, I mean, why even have this debate in a Google, YouTube live stream chat when it's only going to get like no one reads these live chats, I don't think, once the chat is over. I mean, I'm glad you guys had fun in the moment, but I mean, maybe not the best place for this this discussion. A lot of time spent on something you know. But I had a question, though. It says blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. Is the username. What's your question, buddy? If you send me your question now, I'll take it. Otherwise, that's our show for today. Here we go. You have five. You have four. Blah, blah, blah asks, is he's part of the Four Horsemen, right? Together with Dawkins and the others. Yeah, Sam Harris is part of the Four Horsemen. So, like I mentioned, I could see why he's the guy who's getting most of the attention now from young people, especially. He's the youngest of them. He's also the least, you know, insane looking, I guess you can say. Rachel Atwood saying, keep going north in the feed and you could might find something use for value, mate. Well, yep. Oh, well. Until next time, guys, when I'll read your next YouTube live chat about Turkey, Greece, and the Balkans. Wait, hold on, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that Republican voters have also become less interventionist and they dislike Harris for that? I don't know if they dislike Harris. I don't think they dislike Harris for that. I think young Republicans, young conservatives have become less interventionalists, for sure. They're probably more anti-war than they previously were, not for the same reasons the left are, though, for sure. Yeah, I mean, purely anti-interventionalist purposes. They don't want to help anybody. They're all me. America. It's not what the left's... That's not why the left is anti-war. But, yeah. All right. Rachel asked me, you said people mistake you for Arabic. What is your background? Yeah, people, I've been mistaken for being Latino, being, Middle Eastern or Arabic. I'm just a white guy. No, but, I'm a bit of Italian, bit of English, bit of Prussian. That's right, Prussia. Yeah, that's me. Orangeasm, or as he wanted to make sure I know, it's Orangeasm, I guess. My buddy who liked Harris thought religion should be illegal. An odd take I hear from some guys. Well, not an odd take once you add the addendum that he likes Harris. Dinah Cat Loves Me points out, nobody points out that Harris is pro-Israel by heritage. And Renee with the final comment of the episode. Classical Prussian. All right, ladies and gentlemen, hope you enjoyed this episode. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. doomed.tv to go straight to the YouTube channel and subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review, please, on iTunes. We're so close to hitting 100 reviews, really, so close. If you're still listening and you haven't done a review, go to iTunes right now, click that 5-star rating if you want to give it 5 stars. I'm not going to tell you how to rate it, but leave a review, leave a rating. Please, please, please. All right, see you all next time on Doomed.